It's been almost 2 weeks since President Donald Trump's executive order banning immigrants and refugees from 7 predominantly Muslim countries. In the minds of many, a fulfillment of a campaign promise.
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on.
On this week's Eastern Standard, immigration in the Commonwealth. We're interested in your questions, comments, or stories. Is this executive order likely to affect your life, especially if it is put back into place? Will it make you feel safer? Write to us by email at wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Post your comment to the WEKU Facebook page or send a tweet at WEKUEST. In just a little while, we'll open the phones as well. It's time for Eastern Standard, right after the latest news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. It's been almost 2 weeks since President Donald Trump's executive order banning immigrants and refugees from 7 predominantly Muslim countries. That order has had a tight hold on the country's attention since then, and likewise, the court order putting a stay to implementation or continuation of the effects of that executive order. That issue has caused us to decide to talk about immigration in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. We've talked about immigration issues at least once on this program before. We thought we'd have a little bit broader discussion and not focus just on the issue of immigration from the 7 Muslim countries. But certainly we are willing to go there and want to interact with you, our listeners, on this topic. We're interested in your views of the president's executive order, issues of immigration in this country. We're going to talk with folks here about the nature of immigration, the folks who are coming to Kentucky, folks who have come to Kentucky over the number of years, and the effects that that has had on the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Our program is an interactive show, so we're going to encourage you to interact with us by email, by tweet, post on Facebook or the website, or even pick up the phone and give us a call. That email address, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com, will give you the other contact info in just a few moments as I introduce the guests who are with us today. In the studio with us, first up, John Kohlinger, Executive Director of Kentucky Refugee Ministries with offices in Louisville and Lexington. John, did you come in from Louisville this morning?
I did.
Thank you for doing so.
My pleasure, John.
Very grateful for the opportunity to meet you. And we'll talk a little bit about what you do and the scope of immigration in the Commonwealth. Dr. Ming Wen is with us. Ming is a professor of philosophy on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, director of the Asian Studies Program. I know you at one time were director of the Chautauqua Lecture Series on campus. And we've known Ming for a number of years. This is at least your second visit to Eastern Standard. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me back.
And on the line with us, we have Hadil Abdallah. And Hadil is president of the Muslim Student Association at the University of Kentucky. She's actually joining us by Skype this morning because she's a student and she has to go to classes, which I guess you have a class at noon today. Is that correct?
Yes.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us, Hadil. We certainly want to learn about your concerns about and your views on this issue of immigration in the Commonwealth of Kentucky.
Thank you.
John Kohlinger, let's begin with you. Let's talk about the nature of immigration in the Commonwealth. First of all, Kentucky Refugee Ministries. Who is or are Kentucky Refugee Ministries?
Well, we were founded in Louisville in 1990, and we opened an office in Lexington in 1997. We are a local affiliate of Church World Service and Episcopal Migration Ministries. Those two national agencies have agreements with the U.S. State Department to resettle refugees. Kentucky, many people don't know this, but it's 14th in the nation in terms of refugee arrivals. It's seen as due to the welcome, grassroots welcome refugees receive here in Louisville and Lexington. And I can also add we have refugees in Danville and northern Kentucky and other localities, but mostly in Louisville and Lexington. It's been a very successful program in terms of community involvement, in terms of refugees integrating, finding employment, becoming self-supporting. And so that's why it's seen within the National Refugee Resettlement Program as a good place for resettlement.
How many folks come into Kentucky every year from other nations?
We in Louisville were approved to receive 680 refugees this year, and Lexington, 350 refugees.
I know one of the issues of the past year or so has been this issue of refugees from Syria. Am I correct on that? That's the big focus. There's been a lot of concern about folks coming in from that part of the country.
Absolutely, and we were one of the leaders in Louisville in terms of the number of Syrians we've resettled going back to since 2015. We've resettled over 200 Syrians, and also in Louisville, and also we have some in Lexington, and three-quarters of our Syrian refugees are women and children, and, you know, they've suffered horrible trauma, and they had to flee Syria back in 2011, 2012, living in Jordan, Turkey, other countries of asylum in terrible conditions. We've been working with Syrian refugees every day. They come to our office for English classes, case management, cultural orientation. We're finding jobs for Syrian refugees. So, and churches are co-sponsoring Syrian families. We have a lot of volunteers involved in Louisville and Lexington. So those who know Syrian refugees really are taken aback by the fear-mongering and demonization of these vulnerable people as potential terrorists. It just doesn't accord with what we know in Kentucky.
Your organization is, I assume, not the only organization working with refugees coming into Kentucky. Who else helps to settle folks coming into the Commonwealth?
Catholic Charities is resettling refugees, same populations in Louisville, and they've just opened a small office in Lexington. We have the International Center in Bowling Green, and also they have a small office in Owensboro.
Ming Wen is one of the folks who came to this country, I guess it's a number of years ago now. You were a refugee from Vietnam.
Correct.
You've told this story to me before and to some of our listeners before, but if you could briefly tell us your story of your coming into the U.S. Was this during the 1970s?
No, I came I came to the U.S. in 1984 after spending 17 months in two refugee camps in Indonesia. And as you mentioned before, I am a refugee from Vietnam.
And many of the refugees from Vietnam came to this country shortly after the Vietnam War.
That's correct. So after the fall of Saigon in 1975, because of the fear of communist persecution, and indeed there was persecution, so many Vietnamese fled Vietnam. And so there was some people were very lucky to get out of Vietnam by means of helicopters and big ships. But in my case, I was among those so-called boat people who fled on very flimsy boats. So I spent 5 days and five nights in the sea as an unaccompanied minor. I was then 15 years old.
Unaccompanied, by yourself?
That's correct.
15 years old.
15 years old, and so I was supposed to have left with my older brother and younger brother, but because this was an illegal, very chaotic escape, only me somehow ended up, I was the clumsiest one, but somehow I ended up on that little boat.
No, you're here today. Now, where are the rest of your family? What became of them?
Yeah, my brother, the other two brothers in the end also escaped, but on different occasions. And I also have other siblings who escaped. Actually, they escaped. They tried to escape repeatedly, and several of them got caught and were imprisoned. Mm. But now I have a total of seven siblings in the U.S. And five of them escaped by illegal means, and the other two came to the U.S. By means of an orderly departure program.
What about your parents?
My parents have passed away. They
were in Vietnam?
In Vietnam, yeah.
Did they stay behind? Did they make an effort to come to the U.S.?
They did have an opportunity to come to the U.S. In the late 90s, but because of their old age and illness, and they were also afraid as to whether they would be able to adapt to life in the U.S. given their old age. Mm. So they decided to stay back in Vietnam.
Ming brings to us the perspective of someone who's made the effort to come and establish a new life in the U.S.
And John, if I could follow up on Ming's story, the president's executive order doesn't just apply to Muslim refugees from several countries. Last year, the U.S. Admitted 85,000 refugees. The president's executive order would reduce that number to 50,000 refugees. Back under Ronald Reagan, when Ming came, the U.S. admitted close to 200,000 refugees a year for several years. And Ronald Reagan spoke of America as the shining city on the hill, the beacon of hope for people fleeing persecution and dictatorship and coming here for freedom and opportunity. So when I hear talk of making America great again, I'm a little disappointed that it involves reducing Americans' humanitarian leadership in the world.
It's a matter of perspective. To what point do we go back to the so-called when America was great? Let me go to briefly to Hadil Abdallah before we need to take a short break. Hadil, you were born in this country, but as I understand it, your father came to the U.S., your mother an American born. Tell me a little bit about your family. You are a practicing Muslim, I understand?
Yes, my father was born in Palestine and my mother was born in Michigan. And they met when my mother visited overseas for a summer, and I guess the rest is history. And then they moved back here. And, you know, my father is one of the most hardworking people I know. He made, he worked hard and now they're doing pretty well.
And as president of the Muslim Student Association at UK, you're a second-year college student at the University of Kentucky. Why did you get involved in the Muslim Student Association? Was there some personal need that you felt a need to interact with other Muslim students?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. It's not just the fact that, you know, I get to interact with Muslim students on a day-to-day basis, but it's really what the MSA is committed to that I felt a strong attachment towards. So it's not only about building an environment of brother and sisterhood within the community, but it's also an organization that teaches students how to become confident and conscientious individuals in the contemporary and pluralistic society that we're living in right now. And one of the most beautiful things about MSA is that we're open to people of any race, religion, and culture. And so that's what I think is one of the most beautiful things about this organization.
In a few moments, after a station break, I want to talk a little bit about the event that occurred this past Sunday in Lexington, the rally that was actually organized by college and high school students in the Lexington area. This is Eastern Standard. We're talking about immigration in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Your questions, your comments, your personal stories. Did you emigrate to the United States? What about your family? Most of us, in some fashion, our families emigrated to this country. Let's hear your story. 800-621-8890. Write to us by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at wekuest. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. Immigration in the Commonwealth of Kentucky is our topic on this week's show. Our email address, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at wekuest. You're always welcome to post a message on the Facebook page or the website, especially if you're listening to the repeat broadcast on Sunday evening. The show is live on Thursday morning. And on Thursday morning, you're welcome to pick up the phone and give us a call at 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. We're talking about immigration. Last Sunday, a number of students, as I understand it, I think it was 9 high school and college students got together and organized a rally that occurred on the Courthouse Square in downtown Lexington, where so many events occur. Just a few weeks back, there was a rally organized as part of the National Rally for Women that have brought, we're told, over 5,000 people to downtown Lexington. This rally last week brought at least 1,000 people to the Courthouse Square. And among them was Professor Ihsan Bagby. And Professor Bagby is a professor of Islamic studies at University of Kentucky, himself an American native-born. I believe he was raised a Christian and converted to Islam and now very involved in the Muslim faith. And I spoke with him briefly after that rally about his perceptions of the immigration ban that and some would call a ban that the president put in place, and concerns about what some would describe as radical Islamic terrorism, and his observations about where that fits into the picture.
We should not minimize the threat. We should not overlook that there are Muslim groups who are terrorists. So we have to struggle to secure our borders and secure America. The best way to do it is to partner with Muslims. What better group to be a kind of the bird in the canary in the mine than the Muslim community itself? They're the ones who can best spot problems and work with law enforcement, work with other people in the city to try to root out any terrorism. To be frank, that process of kind of engaging and rooting out radicalism in the Muslim community has already taken place, really in the 1990s, without anybody noticing. There was a great debate within the Muslim community about not terrorism, but kind of radicalism. And basically, mosques now are the bulwark for the American Muslim identity and integration in American society. So instead of making mosques the target of surveillance and suspicion and fifth column, they should be welcomed and a sense of open arms to Muslims and a development of a partnership so that we together will confront radicalism.
Professor Ihsan Bagby is a professor of Islamic studies at the University of Kentucky, and I caught up with him again downtown last Sunday in downtown Lexington following the rally organized by college and high school students. Many have described it as a rally in opposition to President Trump's executive order on travel from seven predominantly Muslim countries. Some would also describe it as a rally in support of immigrants. And Hadil Abdallah is on the line with us. And Hadil, I know you were not personally involved or you were unable to attend that rally last Sunday. But let's talk a little bit about your perceptions of the role of something of that nature, folks coming together in that fashion. I know there were a number of people who were visibly identifiably, especially women who would be wearing the head coverings and so forth, identified as Muslims. How do you feel about a rally, an event of that type to support immigrants coming into the U.S.? Were you supportive of that movement?
Yeah, I was definitely supportive of it. I believe that demonstrations are there to, they're meant to reveal the strength of popular opinion or feeling. And I personally believe that they're there to appeal to the conscience of the powers in charge. So I definitely feel like that organizing in that sense is an essential process for developing our collective forces and beginning to win real change in society.
We've never met, but as a student at UK, are you visibly identifiable as a Muslim student on campus? Do you wear a headscarf? A covering that identify and that folks will immediately, when you walk down the hall or enter a class, they say they recognize you as such?
Yeah, yes, I wear a headscarf.
How does that work out? I mean, you know, what is your experience? Do you experience folks who are supportive? Have you run into folks who are, you know, unhappy or uncomfortable with the fact that they're someone who appears to be different, although you're an American-born citizen yourself?
I mean, although generally the current climate on campus has been really welcoming for a lot of students, including myself, but, you know, honestly, I feel like I've felt more warmth come from my campus community more than anything else. You know, I definitely still do have to take caution in certain settings. You know, I don't walk alone past a certain time. I always try to make sure I have at least one person know where I am. And I think I just do that. It's become more subconscious than it is. It's always been something I do subconsciously just to ensure my own safety. Because, you know, not everyone is happy with the fact that, you know, a lot of women do wear the headscarf. But generally, people have been pretty welcoming.
Adil Abdallah is president of the Muslim Student Association at the University of Kentucky. With us in the studio, John Kohlinger, executive director of Kentucky Refugee Ministries, and Dr. Ming Wen, professor of philosophy, director of Asian Studies, and associate director of the Honors Program at Eastern Kentucky University. John Kohlinger, let's talk again about the immigration in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Where do folks from Middle Eastern countries, folks who are, have an Islamic background, a Muslim persons, where do they fit into the picture of immigrants in Kentucky, percentage-wise? And a percentage of one is immigrants, and percentage in the population overall in our state.
Number of refugees is small compared to the overall number of immigrants. And if I could follow up on your question about the rally and to lead into we had a large rally last week in Louisville called by our mayor, Greg Fisher, Rally for American Values. And there were a lot of refugees there, but there were also a lot of church supporters of Kentucky Refugee Ministries, people, Presbyterians, Episcopalians, Baptists, who had welcomed Muslim refugees from Bosnia over the years, from Turkey, from Somalia, from Syria, from Iraq, and kind of recognize the commonality and shared values between, you know, Christians and Muslims. And so we had in Louisville and Lexington great history of interfaith work. And so they were really upset to see the demonization of Muslim refugees. That's just not their experience. But as you mentioned about we have resettled Muslim refugees in Louisville and Lexington, and I don't have the figures, but as I said, it's a couple hundred a year.
Have there been any issues or problems? I mean, we hear these stories once in a while, and a lot of them are not borne out to be necessarily true, but, you know, acts of hatred or discrimination against persons, especially Muslim persons.
Not so much. We see some bullying of children in schools, some incidents on the bus, some harassment on the bus. But by and large, we found Louisville and Lexington to be very welcoming communities to Muslim refugees. And, someone like Khadil is a good example. We have a lot of our adult refugees working entry-level jobs in factories, but their kids are doing very well in school and going on to colleges and being quite successful here.
This is Eastern Standard. We're talking immigration in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, and, of course, in the light of the president's order almost 2 weeks ago on this Thursday. It was 2 weeks ago Friday that the president ordered a stop to immigration or refugees from seven predominantly Muslim countries. And, of course, the court has last weekend put a stay on that. And as we speak, courts are back and forth wrangling over whether or not the president's order is going to be allowed to stand. We're interested in hearing from our listeners across central and southeastern Kentucky, not just in the big cities, but if you're in Hazard, if you're in Pineville, in Corbin, in our communities listening to WEKU, your reaction to the president's order, your reaction to the reaction. People have reacted to the president's order, and we certainly are glad to hear all sides of that issue. What do you think about the president's executive order? Would it make you feel more safe to know that travel from these countries is being limited? Are you appalled that the president would take such action? 800-621-8890. Write to us by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at wekuest. Post on the Facebook page or the website, of course. Again, that phone number, 800-621-8890. Ming Wen, again, coming to the United States 30-some years ago, Do folks from like yourself who have come from another area of the world completely than the Middle East, how do you view this current situation and this concern about terrorism and this concern about people from a certain background or religious point of view? What does that mean to you, and what has it caused you to do or think in the course of all of this?
I believe that the president has a sacred responsibility to protect our nation. So I think that the desire for to protect our nation is a good one, and but I believe that this executive order, especially the suspension of the entry of refugees, however temporary, I don't think it is a good. It's not necessary, because we already have extreme vetting of the refugees already. I mean, 33 years ago, as I mentioned before, I stayed in a refugee camp for 17 months.
And that was part of the vetting process to make sure that you were someone that we wanted to allow into this country?
That's correct. I mean,
what was done? Were you asked questions? Were you interrogated?
Yes. Interrogation maybe is the wrong word.
Well,
but
that's a strong word.
It was a very serious series of interviews. And actually, I was rejected. My application to come to America was rejected. And they want to make sure that I wasn't a communist sympathizer, that I can, if I do get a chance to resettle in America, then I would make a positive contribution to this country. And I think that those are the right questions to ask us, including a 15-year-old unaccompanied minor. So there was extreme vetting even back then, 33, 35 years ago.
Long before the 9/11 attacks.
Yeah. So I just don't, I think that after 35 years, you know, the sophistication of this program must be very, very impressive. So I just don't think that this ban, this suspension of this refugee entry program is well thought out. It doesn't accomplish what it seems to intends to accomplish, because I mean, think about it. If there is a bad person, a bad hombre, right? who want to do bad things to America, why should you want to go through the refugee program in order to get here? It is much easier to get a fake tourist visa, a student visa, a worker visa to get here and do some damage to the United States than staying 2 years in a bad refugee camp, and then you may or may not get a chance to resettle in the U.S. So I just think that we should try continue to refine our vetting program and make it as rigorous as possible in order to help those we want to help to get into the U.S. and to shut out those who may want to do bad things to the U.S. But I don't want us to do so and then suspend the refugee program at the same time. So that's my opinion on the executive order in relation to the refugees.
John Kohlinger.
Yeah, Ming couldn't have said it better. It is extreme vetting, and you know, we have refugees, as I mentioned, from Syria who come here 5 years after fleeing Syria. That's quick. A lot of our refugees have been living in their countries of asylum for 10 or 15 years. We have a lot of children who are born in the refugee camp, and the vetting is extreme. The refugees are interviewed 2 and 3 times, and husbands and wives, I've talked to them, they are interrogated. They're placed in separate locations, and their stories are cross-checked, and then there's biometric, they're fingerprinted and biometric screening and very sophisticated sort of computer database screening. So it's by a wide margin, it is the vetting refugees are subject to is the most rigorous, thorough, and prolonged of any entrant to the United States. As Ming mentioned, there are numerous easier and faster ways to get to the United States.
I want to get back to Hadil in a moment because we need to let her go when we take this next station break. But John, the travel order by the president of just two weeks ago, has that affected in the brief period of time that order was in place, did it affect any immigration to Kentucky or anyone, you know, that, are you aware of any situations that were made more complicated because of that order?
Absolutely. We had refugees. We had homes waiting for them. We had churches ready to welcome them. The furniture was in there. Their travel was deleted at the last minute. A Burmese refugee and her children to be reunited with their family. They were deleted at the last minute because of the order. Rebooked for next week. We'll see what the court's ruling, if that allows them to come. We have people who came from 7 hours away from the refugee camp who were, their travel was canceled at the last minute, and they've returned to the refugee camp. So a lot of human consequences.
Hadil, I know we're going to let you go when we take the station break in about 2 minutes, but any further comments you'd like to offer to us from the from your point of view, from the point of view of the Muslim Student Association at UK?
Yes, the Muslim students, something that I really want everyone to know is that what a lot of people don't realize is Muslim students are some of the most active students on campus. And I can't say this for maybe all campuses, but I know on the University of Kentucky campus there, we're always striving to help others and we're always mobilizing and trying to educate and coordinate students to struggle against injustice and oppression against anyone. And we're always here for everyone. And if there's anything anybody ever needs, the Muslim students are always at the forefront of trying to go against any kind of injustice that may be caused. So that's just something I want everyone to know. And if there's any questions anyone may ever have, they're always welcome to reach us at ukymsa.com.
You sound like a good representative of the organization on campus, the Muslim Student Association. Hadil Abdallah, thank you so much for being with us. We're going to let you go so you can get back to why you're at UK in the first place, is going to school. So thank you so much and take care. And hopefully we'll stay in touch with you.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope you have a wonderful morning.
This is Eastern Standard. We're talking about immigration in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. We do have callers waiting on the line, and Don from Lexington and Jim from London, we hope you're going to be able to stay on the line with us. We'll get to you shortly. 800-621-8890. Write to us by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at wekuest. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. Immigration in the Commonwealth of Kentucky is our topic on this week's program. And we are grateful to Hadil Abdallah of the Muslim Student Association at the University of Kentucky, who was with us for the first couple of segments of the show. Still with us, John Kohlinger, Executive Director of Kentucky Refugee Ministries, and Dr. Ming Wen, Professor of Philosophy and Director of Asian Studies at the Eastern Kentucky University. And we are glad to hear from you, our listeners, at 800-621-8890. Shall we talk to Don from Lexington? I hope you're still on the line with us, Don. Thank you for waiting, and thanks for being patient with us, Don. Go right ahead.
Well, it's a firm belief of mine that our emotions are primarily driven by fear and hate, and, of course, paranoia is part of fear. And all our institutions, religion, television, movies all play upon what people have internally, and throughout history we have basically been afraid of immigrants and refugees. And while I was sitting there, I was thinking about the one group that had legitimate reason to be fearful of immigrants and refugees, and that was the American Indian. We don't understand or try to attempt an education of the general public, especially our leadership. Maybe in Louisville, this mayor has been doing this, but there's not much courage or backbone in most political leaders or even substantial numbers of religious leaders, except for minor appearances at events and publicity for their institutions. We really have to be a strong group of people who re-educates the public to destroy fear and hate that is so pervasive.
Don, thank you so much for your comment. Ming or John, any reaction to Don?
I think that, yes, because, and also because when people hear of the term Muslim ban, and I really don't like that term at all, I'm not sure that it is accurate. It instills a certain kind of fear, and especially among the Muslims and other minorities in this country, and it may even embolden some of the haters out there who go around and harass other people, and is also undermines our capacity to fight against the real terrorists, because when people hear of terms such as the Muslim ban, make them reluctant. So people who are sympathetic to our cause, they may be reluctant to cooperate with us because they may feel that they cannot trust us. And so it just reinforces this narrative that somehow America hates Muslims, which is not. I have seen many Muslims here, and they are very well received, and so is we have, and I'm making this point so that we need to be really, really, really careful, not only about our action, but also about our rhetoric, and this goes to all sides. This also all sides, in my view, from what I have read and understand. This is not a Muslim ban, but it has been portrayed as such. And it just contributes to this polarization, and it has consequences. It may lead to violence. So I just want to plead to beg all sides just to be careful about the language that you use and about the actions that you perform. And because
I want to get back to the phone and talk to Jim from London in just a moment, but let me send this question to John Kohlinger here. This came by tweet from Tyler, who asked, can you speak to the data that contradicts immigrants stealing native-born jobs? Do immigrants come to this country and take jobs away from current Americans?
You know, I can say in our employment of refugees is very robust in Louisville and Lexington. And just in Louisville, we placed over 900 refugees in full-time jobs in calendar year 2016, over 150 companies. And so I've worked at KRM for 16 years, and we have a lot of new companies calling us, asking, you know, if we can help them find reliable employees. So, you know, they've had a lot of time to fill those vacancies, and if they're reaching out to our agency, you know, I don't see that as taking jobs. I mean, we just get tremendous feedback about the work ethic of refugees, and that goes back to the earlier question. It's disappointing that this word refugee has become so emotionally charged, because we've been resettling refugees in the United States since World War II. We've been resettling refugees in Kentucky since 1990. Here's Ming, a professor who came in 1984. So refugees are our coworkers here in Kentucky, our neighbors, our professors, our students at our university. So it's been working for such a long time.
Well, Don made a reference to Native Americans. I mean, everyone's been a refugee or an immigrant since them.
Mm-hmm.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. 800-621-8890 is our phone number. You're welcome to get on the line and be part of our program during our live broadcast on Thursday morning. Let's go back to the phone and talk to Jim from London, another patient listener who has been on the line waiting for a while. Jim, thanks for calling. Go right ahead.
Thank you. I'd just like to make the point that from my point of view, and, you know, I'll not from the left or from the right on the issue, I don't think that there's a major problem with accepting refugees in this country. What I think has happened is we have took this discussion to a point of issue with immigration. I've always seen and been around and worked with people from all over the world, and more than willing, everybody I talk to that I know is more than willing to accept refugees and people. The problem is it, in a broader light, I think it goes back to the reporting and the agenda of the issue. Now, the president said that he is halting immigration from seven countries that is known to have that are hotbeds of violence and destabilization. So the point I would like to make is I understand that 99.9% of these people can be vetted, but I also think it's common sense that if they're fleeing a country, they're fleeing destabilization and war, and basically there's no services there. So we talk about biometric screening and things. From my firsthand experience overseas, serving in the military, biometrics only works in countries that we have first operated in for amount of time and collected previous data on possible terrorists or insurgents. And two, so that data is not going to work unless they're in the system from another country. There's a chance it may, you know, here and there, but overall, it's not a system that's going to work. Two, who are you interviewing besides the person? The only information you're going to have from a security standpoint is going to come from that person, because you're not going to call a government agency. You're not going to call the equivalent of FBI office in Syria or Social Security office. So you're going off basic instinct. First, we need to admit that. American people might feel better about it if we just come clean and say, you know, it's the best we can do, and that's what we have. Three, look at countries that have been taking in refugees for a while from these horrific places that obviously been through a lot of trauma. You want to bring folks in, and now look at Australia, especially in Europe. You just have, for an example, you take a child that's 13 or 14, he gets here, he's raised up, or she's raised up in a world of violence, and they're going to get over here. You're going to throw them in this environment. Obviously, not speaking for all, but there's plenty of examples that is there any kind of counseling for these folks to deter them from becoming radicalized? Because obviously some of the events that a lot of these folks have been through, especially younger adults or children that will soon be young adults, I ain't going to be able to cope with.
Sure. Jim, you know what? You raise a number of very important issues and issues that I think our guests can respond to. So thank you for calling in and for being patient with us and staying on the line. Jim calling in from London this morning. John Kohlinger, in response to what Jim just said.
A couple of points. We just heard during the break about a Syrian prison where 13,000 Syrians were tortured and executed by the government. And the Syrian government's bombed and used poison gas and killed hundreds of thousands of its people. So it's true. The U.S. is not going to go to the Syrian government and ask them for information about people that they've tried to kill, just as we didn't in the 80s talk to the communist government in Vietnam about Ming Wing's family and whether they were good people or not. I mean, the governments themselves have committed horrific crimes. So the screening of refugees is never relied on home country information. And we do have mental health services, and I think the big difference about radicalization and why refugee resettlement's been so successful here compared to Europe, for example, we're giving refugees full stake in this society. In Germany, they're not allowed to work, or in Europe, it's very difficult to become a citizen of those countries. Our refugees, they're required to work, pay their own way, to become permanent residents. They apply for citizenship. It's a very proud moment for them. Nobody's prouder to be an American than a former refugee who's had his rights and freedoms deprived. So, and they're welcomed with churches and volunteers. So it's a very warm welcome. And that has worked for us to prevent radicalization, you know, along with professional services of the refugees we've brought here. They're very well integrated and assimilated, as opposed to other countries where they're given some benefits and some asylum, but they can't really become, you know, full citizens.
Yeah, if I may make some comments about some of the points that two previous callers made about jobs. I just want to give one personal example. And both of my two of my siblings in North Carolina are small business owners. They actually create jobs. Mm. They actually create jobs and they hire people. So they do not take jobs from anyone. They just like good Americans.
They created it for themselves.
Yeah, create for themselves and create for all the Americans.
Sure, and services, I assume, or products for their community.
Yes. And the second point is about counseling and radicalization. I imagine that my situation and other Vietnamese refugee situations is similar to the situations of people fleeing Syria and Iraq and so on and so forth. We have gone through war. We have gone through persecution. We have gone to the refugee camps, and we have experienced, not in my case, but in many other refugees' cases, rape, murders, piracy, and all the bad stuff. And it is a serious issue, but the counseling system in America is really, really advanced. And I have to say that thanks to that, I was able, and my siblings and other refugees that I have known were able to adapt to life in America and make a positive contributions to America's. So I don't think it's a serious worry. We should continue to make our counseling program at school, especially better for the children of refugees. But I have full confidence in those counselors.
In just a few minutes remaining, I'm just wondering, going forward, if the president's travel restrictions are upheld by the courts and continue from where they left off, after they were in effect for about 5 or 6 days, what will that mean to us in Kentucky? If the ban is eliminated, what will that mean? I mean, what effect will this national debate and this whole discussion have on Kentucky one way or the other, John Kohlinger?
Again, Kentucky's a lot of refugees are welcomed here in Kentucky, and so the executive order, it also includes a 4-month suspension of the entire refugee program.
Does that shut down your work?
It does, and probably for the remainder of the year, because they're withdrawing the Department of Homeland Security teams that conduct the security screenings and the overseas processing would take some time to restart. So it's and I mentioned earlier just that lowering the number of refugees brought into the country. I unfortunately do feel that the new administration has some designs about downsizing the program. So it would affect, you know, our agencies, but it would affect a lot of Kentucky businesses that employ refugees, and it would upset a lot of, like, volunteers and supporters who've welcomed refugees and been involved in a grassroots level.
Is your organization, Kentucky Refugee Ministries, or the other church faith-based organization, are you politically active, lobbying or interacting with the government on these issues?
We are a tax-exempt, 501c3 nonprofit organization. We don't involve ourselves in electoral, politics in any way, shape, or form. But we believe strongly in our program on its humanitarian benefits for refugees and the contributions refugees make to Kentucky. So we do oppose this executive order.
And let me ask both of you, Ming Wen and John Kohlinger, what would you advise our listeners if they're concerned about these issues? How can they learn more? How can they take a position, get involved in assisting those who are coming to this country as immigrants or refugees?
You know, I am a teacher, so I'm always for education. So I would advise, if I may, our listeners to learn more about our program by you know, do more reading, do more viewing. But if I may add one more thing, and that is that, you know, this month, February, is Black History Month. And I'm very happy that President Trump has mentioned a number of times that Dr. Martin, he expressed admiration for Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And both of them often talk about making America great, making America first. So the instinct to become, the desire to be first is a good instinct. It's a good aspiration if we use it right. But for Dr. King, we ought to be first in not only intellectual but also moral excellence, first in justice, first in compassion, first in generosity, first in feeding the hungry, first in clothing the naked and sheltering the poor and protecting not only our national security, but also loving others, especially the most vulnerable among us, the unborn, the refugees who have lost everything, their homes, their families and friends, their livelihood. And the only thing left for them is their humanity. So we ought to do all these things because that's who we are, and that is who we are called to be.
Yeah. Ming-Wen, thank you so much for being here, telling your story once again, and for your words on this week's Eastern Standard. John Kohlinger,
thank you, John.
We will make sure we have a link to Kentucky Refugee Ministries and other services. So if you have some suggestions for us, we should put on our website for our listeners
yes,
as well.
Yes, absolutely, kyrm.org. And, you know, we have refugee children who need tutoring and support, and we have refugees who need employment. And so I invite everybody to go to our website or just become informed on these issues.
Thank you so much, John Kohlinger, Executive Director of Kentucky Refugee Ministries, and Ming-Wen, Professor of Philosophy at Eastern Kentucky University, Director of the Asian Studies Program. Also, Hadil Abdullah, President of the Muslim Student Association, who was with us for a portion of the program as well. Thanks to our associate producers for Eastern Standard, Noah Day and Marissa Hempel, our Technical Director, Brian Bartlett. We remind you this program will be available online later today for online listening and as a podcast. The show will also repeat on Sunday evening at 6 o'clock. We're always glad to hear from you, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com, and be sure to follow us on Twitter at WEKU EST. I'm John Hingsbergen. Thanks for tuning in.